Welcome to the Linux Journal Insider for issue number 204, April 2011, Web Development. So, Kyle, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, I have to say. I've been pretty busy lately. I got a new job at the beginning of the year. So I've been sort of learning the ropes at a new gig. You know, it's always strange when you start a new job trying to learn how everybody does things there, but things are going really well, and I'm happy there. So,
like, do you want fries with that? Do you want fries with that? It gets hard.
Plus the value menu changes, you know, all the time.
Yeah, and you have to tell people we don't supersize. It's not called supersize anymore. Yeah, no, I get it.
Well, yeah. Well, plus, did you know that they stop breakfast at 10 o'clock? I thought it was always 11, but they stop it at 10.
It's 11 o'clock here. It's still 11 o'clock here because most of Michigan is unemployed, so we don't have to wake up early. It's sad, but that's not really a joke. But on to happier news, did you hear that Amazon actually is trying to compete with Netflix for streaming?
I saw something like that. I thought that was kind of weird because Netflix was using their servers for streaming. Maybe Amazon was like, well, hey, why don't we just use our own servers for this?
And the cool part is they use Flash. Now, that's not the cool part. But the cool part is because they use Flash, it's Linux compatible. So sitting here on my Linux desktop, I can stream videos from Amazon. And if you're an Amazon Prime subscriber, no, do you use Amazon a lot? Do you order stuff from Amazon?
I order stuff from Amazon a fair amount. Not enough, I don't think, to be an Optimus Prime user. But
okay. Well, I am an Optimus Prime user with Amazon, which means all their streaming content is free. So, like for that $79 a year, now I have free streaming. Now, I got to be honest, their catalog is rather horrifying. They have only British shows. The only redeeming quality so far is it looks like they have a lot of episodes of Doctor Who.
Nice.
Yeah, but that's about it. The selection is poor. Maybe that'll get better. You know,
that's kind of how that's how Netflix streaming was for the longest time. I mean, it was like the same, like the Eraserhead movie, and like, you know, it's like the same four movies were the only things that were available for a long time. They started fleshing it out.
Yeah, the one I watched today was a Christopher Walken movie, and it was like Brain something or other. And it's funny to see him as a young man.
Nice. So it wasn't The Prophecy?
No.
Oh, that's a classic Walken movie.
Old, like, late 70s, early 80s movie. Everybody's smoking, and it's really cool, apparently. And, yeah, it was interesting. Anyway, this month is the web development issue. And, Kyle, you and I, neither one are web developers. But we're going to do our best to talk about this issue and we can probably get lots of emails about how we don't know what we're talking about. But if we freely admit that, it's okay.
Right.
And so my first article, actually, I'm going to hand right off to a professional. The article is an interview, Drupal 7, the web chick behind the wheel. Our own Catherine Druckmann interviewed Angela Byron, who is in charge of the Drupal 7 release. And we're going to play a clip. She was actually with Angela recently and interviewed her. So we're going to play that clip right now with the magic of post-editing. It will be here now.
Tell me why it's so gratifying to run an amazing open source project of a ginormous scale. Why is it worth all of the effort that you have to put into it and all of the stress and all of the many, many hours?
I think what really got me into Drupal in the first place was I love how Drupal is used in so many ways for really good causes. Like, it's used by educational institutions and libraries and nonprofits and activist organizations and stuff like that. So it really causes me to, like, get into it when I can know that the long hours I'm putting in or whatever are sort of, like, useful to the world at large. So I get a big kick out of the fact that, like, Amnesty International is going to use this code someday, and it makes me really proud to work on that. And I think the other thing that is really awesome is just working with all the really smart, talented, and really giving people in the Drupal community, because they're brilliant, but they're not, like, jerks about it. You know, like they're really willing to share what they know with other people. It's like it's not like I know this and you don't, so back off because you're not good enough for me. It's more like I know this and it's awesome and let me tell you about it and stuff like that. And I really just enjoy working in a kind of a mentoring environment like that and being part of that whole movement. So.
Whoa, wasn't that awesome?
That was an awesome interview. It's like came through really clear and it was a really good interview.
Yeah, and you haven't even heard it yet because, you know, the post-editing thing.
Oh, yeah.
But, hey, that's okay. Thank you, Catherine. Thank you, Angelo. That was I appreciate that. And Kyle, we'll segue right to you for the second article.
Okay, so the article I'm going to talk about is Drush, Drupal for People who Hate Mice. Now, I have to admit, when I first scrolled down, before I go any further, this is by James Walker, who's a Drupal consultant. He does a lot of work with Drupal. Actually, I met both James and Angela Byron. I went to Southwest Drupal Summit last month and got to hang out with both of them. Very cool people. I like both of them, actually. They were really easy to get along with, really cool guys, or guy and girl. But this article was called, like I said, Drush, Drupal for People Who Hate Mice. But I have to say, when I was scrolling down and looking at this, or I guess, you know, reading this article, at first, for some reason, I thought it said Drewish. I'm not sure what that's about. But basically, Drush, I think Drush, but you probably could say Drush because it's like Drupal shell, but I would still say Drush. Anyway, the idea behind this is that, you know, you have a lot of content management systems like Drupal, and you generally configure them or do a lot of the management via the web browser, where a lot of people, like myself and like James, both like the command line. And so what Drush is basically a command line of program that allows you to change Drupal or tweak Drupal or do a lot of management of Drupal strictly on the command line without having to click through a lot of GUIs. Now, so the article itself walks through how to get Drush installed, how to get everything set up, and then he gives some examples of some of the features that it can use. Like, for example, a common need when you're programming with Drupal is to flush caches so that you can make sure changes that you make are the latest changes. So he shows how to do that. He gives a lot of good examples of Drush. Where I could see this really coming in handy is if you're a web developer who's managing a lot of different Drupal sites and you want to automate changes to a lot of them. I could see, you know, having one benefit to the command line in general is just scripting, making the same change over and over again in the script. So if you're a Drupal developer, I definitely recommend, if you haven't used Drush yet, reading this article and checking it out.
And speed. I mean, speed is always nice in the command line versus waiting for a web page to load. I mean, even if it's a super fast server and, you know, super fast client, waiting for web pages to load is always, it's always a pain compared to just hitting enter on the command line and having it be done.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah. And so there's no segue here, I guess. It's not a segue.
Well, yeah, you're talking about speed and performance, weren't
speed
you?
And performance.
And how the command line is simpler, you know, in many ways.
You're right. And so that leads us to my next article, Simplicity and Performance, JavaScript on the Server by Avi Deitcher. I'm going to be blunt here. This article was way over my head. I'm not a programmer. I'm not a JavaScript programmer. But basically it's talking about how JavaScript has progressed over the years. And while you used to have a really difficult time accessing the server's file system and such with JavaScript, now there's ways to do that. And it's a very efficient and great, simple way to write web programs now, as it always has been, but it's actually matured and gotten even better over the years. Now, the great thing for people like me is Avi puts some programming samples right in the article. The first one, you know, basically a hello world type thing where it shows you how to do that and then, you know, leads into some more file manipulation stuff. But if you are a web programmer and, you know, you need to know more about JavaScript, this really will point you in the right direction as to how much JavaScript has progressed over the years.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I'm not a JavaScript programmer myself either. I do some programming on the side, but I'm, you know, like more of a sysadmin during the day. But One of the interesting things about this article is just see, like I said, like you were saying, there's a lot of good examples of that even someone like myself who knows some programming languages but not JavaScript directly can pick up and do, you know, and copy and paste, get the idea of behind the example, and then tweak what I need to tweak to emulate the example. So
yeah.
Really good article if you want to do some JavaScript.
Yeah, because it's a good language.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of good languages, that reminds me of my article I'm going to talk about next, which is Zotonic, the Erlang Content Management System. This is by Michael Connors. And basically, this article is talking about a CMS that I actually hadn't heard about before, so this is pretty interesting, called Zotonic. That's not an enemy of Superman or anything. It's a content management system that is written in Erlang. So the idea behind writing it in Erlang was that is that websites these days are starting to look a lot like telephone exchanges, is what the article is talking about. And a lot of telephone exchanges were written in Erlang, and so it made sense to write a content management system in a similar language. It's interesting, Zotonic sort of touts itself, it seems, as being a content management system that that's supposed to be really lightweight and can run well on low resources. When I looked into this, the article talks about how to set it up and how to set up a default site and how to go through basic management, and also talks about the modular system it has. Now, unlike a system such as, say, Drupal or WordPress, it seems like there are fewer, I could be mistaken, but it seems like there's fewer modules out of the box for Zotonic. However, there's examples of how to add modules and how to use some other tools to set up Zotonic. The interesting thing I thought when I was reading this article is it really reminded me of desktop environments where, so you may have, let's say that GNOME is WordPress and Drupal is KDE, and, everyone can now send all the flames my direction for making that comparison. But let's just say that that's two popular, commonly used desktop environments. I would say Zotonic kind of reminds me, reading this article, it kind of reminded me of like a Flexbox, or like an Openbox or something like that, where you have a lightweight environment that is, it's very configurable, but there's not a whole lot of bells and whistles turned on by default, but it's designed to be, to be a little bit faster and a little bit more resource efficient. So,
As flashy, but good.
Yeah, not as flashy, but get the job done, So if you're the kind of person that is into those other desktop environments, you may want to give Zotonic a look for, a nice lightweight CMS.
Speaking of desktop environments, that actually leads me right into, now I hate to just cut right off there, but I do want to talk about a letter that we got, and it's from Jim O about the Unity desktop. Now, Kyle, have you used the Unity desktop at all?
I have not used the Unity desktop yet.
Okay, well, I'll just briefly go over this. It's a long letter. I'll just read part of it here. It says, thank you for the February 2011 issue about Linux desktop. I'm currently running Ubuntu 10.10 on an EPC, and I find it superior to XP. One exception is Unity. I found it to be difficult to use, and he goes on to talk about why. And then in the magazine, I actually agree with him. I do not like the Unity desktop. Basically, Kyle, let me explain it to you. It's the desktop that has been in Ubuntu Netbook Remix or Netbook Edition for a few releases. And in Ubuntu 11.04, Canonical is going to make it the default desktop. And basically, it seems to be I hate to use the term dumbed down because I know some people really like it, but there's a dock on the left-hand side. It's ideally supposed to take advantage of widescreen monitors and, save some vertical space by using some of the room on the sides. So we put a dock on the side and give you some more vertical real estate free. But the whole menu system has changed, and I don't use the menu a whole lot. I like to make shortcuts to start applications and stuff. But the whole menu system, there's not like a menu system with like accessories, games, graphics, internet, and like programs in there. It's really weird in a bizarre way that you have to find the programs, like type in the name or it's just, it's awkward. And it also seems to be designed for people who like full-screen applications. And with the desktop edition, I don't know that that's going to be the case. I think that they'll allow windowing and stuff, but it just seems like a dumbed-down interface that I'm just not a big fan of.
Weird. Interesting. Yeah, I guess when 11.04 comes out and I get around to upgrading and crossing my fingers and upgrading, I'll have to give that a try, I guess. I mean, the thing is, for me today, I'm using sort of the default Ubuntu desktop, but at the same time, I don't really use it like the default Ubuntu desktop. I'm back in the day, I think we've already talked about, you know, me being an Enlightenment user, then Fluxbox, and
right.
And you know, I kind of expect all that stuff now to get out of my way. Like, I just have it there because I want some place to have, you know, a CPU load monitoring and things like that. But I don't even use the menuing system anymore. I use GNOME-do, actually, a whole lot to launch programs. I don't even click a menu system anymore. So I guess, you know, I guess I'll have to give it a try and see if it can get out of my way.
Yeah, you know, you might like it. I mean, it kind of feels like it's in my way. And I don't go to the menu system unless it's a program I don't launch very often. And for the programs I launch often, I just have, you know, little shortcuts up in my taskbar kind of thing. Do you have two taskbars on your system, or just one?
I just one. I just have the panel on the top with, I have a lot of, I used to have gcrelum running, like that nice system monitor program.
Yeah.
I used that for years and years and years. And then finally I started looking, I said, well, if I can get all of the same monitoring in the fit in that panel along the top, then I'll get rid of it. And finally I was able to get everything I needed up in the panel. So then I got rid of it. So I had more screen real estate. And same I did behind the taskbar at the bottom. I used the Docky plugin for a while. And then I realized, you know, I never actually clicked on program. You know what the weird thing is? I guess I don't minimize applications very much. Like, I either have them open or I have them closed. So right. I haven't figured out how I'm going to find a program if I minimize it. Maybe I just don't minimize a program. I don't know where it would go.
So do you just alt tab through things?
I just kind of, you know, I have six workspaces. And I just sort of move. Yeah, I have certain things open. For example, when I do this podcast, I go to an empty workspace I usually don't work from, and open the programs I need for this. And then when I'm done, I close them down. And then I have a couple of desktops that just have things I have on all the time. Like, I have one that just has my browser and, you know, a couple of programs, and one that just has a couple terminals open. So I don't know.
Gotcha.
I probably just use it kind of weird. I'm not sure.
No, that's fine. And, you know, I will follow that up with, even if Unity Desktop is the default, it doesn't mean that it's going to be unusable for those of us that don't like it, because it's Linux. You just, you know, install what you like. I mean, I don't think I use a single default application that Ubuntu comes with, except for Firefox. I do use Firefox still. Yeah. But apart from that, you know, you can change anything. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen with 11.04. I'm not like a diehard Ubuntu fan. I just like that it works out of the box pretty easily, and I'm lazy. So, you know, I don't want to configure stuff much anymore. I just want it to configure hardware automatically. So I think I'm an Ubuntu user out of laziness more than anything.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of in that same boat. I know some friends of mine have even toyed with going back to just raw Debian, and I thought about that, but I was like, well, but when last time I used it on a laptop, it was fun at the time, but I had to spend all this time getting all the little bits of hardware working. And
you know, I actually tried. I went back to Linux Mint Debian Edition, which is, I mean, it's a very well-configured version of Debian, but even the few things that aren't automatically configured, I just remembered, oh, yeah, I mean, it's fun, but I really don't have time to configure a Debian system right now. So I went back to Ubuntu because most of the work was done for me. So we're way past time now. So, hey, Kyle, thank you very much. And thank you all for listening to Linux Journal Insider for the April 2011 issue. Make sure to pick up a copy on newsstands in mid-March. Subscribers, if you're listening to this, you probably already have a copy in your hands. And if not, it's probably on the way. Check your mailbox. We hope you enjoy. Next month is our security issue, so make sure to tune in again, and don't forget to visit us at www.linuxjournal.com. Hey, Kyle, thanks a lot, and I'll talk to you again next month.
Talk to you next month.